All right. Good morning. This is really fun. I was telling some folks that when they ask us and the Anders to do the empty nest session, I was like, are there going to be any people here, you know, that are our age? And so it's so encouraging. I saw last night. I'm like, no. Oh, thank you. So, my wife's main job is to help me. So I'm thankful that she has the freedom to do that. You know, last night I thought, honey, we may be, you know, the oldest couple here. And so last night I was like, my goodness, we're far, far from that. So anyway, I know all of you are younger than us. So anyway, there are some old people somewhere around here. I'm gonna pray for us, and then we're going to introduce ourselves. And then we'll jump in. So, Father, thank you just for the sweetness of marriage, especially in this life stage, and just all the just elements of this stage that we all share. And I thank you for just the freshness and the newness that you have, that walking with you, especially in marriage, it's never stale. It's never gets old. Thank you for the way you are constantly changing things going on in our lives that just allow us to depend on you and deepen our intimacy in the midst of marriage. So I pray for our time, just that this will be helpful, and just thank you for just the ways we don't have to figure this out, the way you give us just rails to run on in every phase of life and every phase of marriage. And so thank you for the way we can just build our marriages on the foundation of you and your word and your spirit. We thank you for Christ. Amen. Okay, Anders, y'all introduce yourselves.
Yes, yeah, so I'm Todd, Julie Anders. We've been married 25 years. We've got a 22-year-old who's a senior in college, and a 21-year-old, or soon to be 21-year-old, who's a junior in college. And we've been around here a long time. Is that good?
That's perfect. It's funny. The Anders were here before we were even here, and we were part of the first membership class back in 2000, 22 years ago. So we're Kyle and Lucina Thompson. We've been married 40 years.
So that makes us old.
Okay.
So we are old.
Yeah, you could do the math on that. Our son Jordan is, he's in his mid-30s. He's actually on staff here. He's single. He's in the production area. Our daughter and son-in-law are in their mid-30s. They've been married for 10 years. They serve in the merge area. Someone was telling me that their kids got to have them as table leaders. So again, it's kind of fun to see all the connections even through our kids. And then our three grandkids are here also. So I've told them, hey, now I've got skin in the game to invest in this next generation, because they're going to be discipling and training our grandkids. So what we want to do is we're going to spend about, 30 minutes or so going through different topics and just talking about the relevancy of that. And we want to spend half of our time in Q&A, because we really want to talk about what you all want to talk about. And so that's how we're going to try to use our time. So it's going to move there. We're going to bounce a lot with, with four of us in 30 minutes. But just to help us to get started, how many of you have either, kids in school or kids out of school, but no kids that are married? Raise your hand. All right. That's a lot. Okay, good. How many of you have kids that are married but no grandkids? Okay. And how many of you have grandkids? All right. It's a lot. So good. That's helpful. This first topic, just, vision for your marriage in the next stage. And again, this next stage really hits on all of those that I just talked about. And we're going to just walk through, I'm going to walk through some just very foundational scripture and and principles that relate to that. And so number one, you know, comes really out of 1 Peter 4:8, just the opportunity to double click on deepening your love for each other. You know, 1 Peter 4:8, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. And, you know, the life stage that all of us are in, there are changes coming at us really fast. I mean, there's so many things. It seems like you go through a phase for a long time where you get into a routine, you know, really of where you're, you know, you're just trying to get your kids to the next stage. And then all of a sudden you've got a radical change for you and your marriage. And, you know, it's so critical during this time, again, it's why I love that verse, that we are praying together, that we know that we are for each other. Because of the, you know, often the grieving that happens, not only as your kids go to school, but as they move away, as there's changes in those relationships, that can manifest itself in conflict, you know, for us as husbands and wives. And so, you know, just extending each other a lot of grace. Number two, just doing this together in understanding ways, which is really based on that. 1 Peter 3:7-9, husbands in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she's a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. And then the exclamation point, so that your prayers will not be hindered. And then I love this verse, this next two verses, because it really, I think, for each of us sums up how we have to be intentional to do these things. To sum it up, be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing. And it is so easy to drift and just, you know, pick at each other. It's just that little, you know, picking, because we know each other so well. And so just being intentional to do this, to listen, to celebrate, to understand. And I often, you know, Lucina and I often think about just the adjustments in this stage of our marriage are very similar to the adjustments that people make when they're first married, you know, because they're just recalibrating to something that's radically different. And that's really what we're doing. And the other thing is, this is a stage of life where having issues with our kids can really drive a wedge in our marriages, you know, as they struggle, as we see things going on that we want to control or change. It can really create a lot of conflict in our marriage. And so just being intentional to be aware of that and to be purposeful in the ways that we move towards each other. And then three, Acts 18:26. Just finding opportunities for shared ministry. This is where really working to do things together. And I love how Priscilla and Aquila did this when it says they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. They were obviously doing ministry together. And, you know, during the school years, as our kids are growing up, there can be a tendency for us to divide and conquer, where we're doing our own thing. You know, we're going different directions. You take the kids here, I'll take them there. And it's critical that we reevaluate and we reestablish a vision for what our life together looks like. And just being proactive in that. And it's you know, at Watermark, we even try to have a lot of venues for that, you know, opportunities for couples to serve together. Again, whether that's merge, re-engage, whatever it might be, foundation groups. And then lastly, plan and allow God to direct. Proverbs 16:9, the man, mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. And again, just being proactive, just in the ways that we recognize what's coming and do that. And so I'm going to let Todd and Julie talk briefly about what that stage looked like for them.
Yeah, so to give you a little context, 3 years ago, I retired from work, and we became empty nesters in the same year. And I guess the pandemic was going on as well, right? Lest we forget that. So for us, the two big adjustments happened at one period of time. Thankfully, we had had some really good friends who we love share with us the reality of moving toward that empty nester stage and the fact that we needed to be doing several things with respect to each other as we were having our kids leave the house. We need to be thinking about how we do ministry together and what that looks like, how we have fun together and what that looks like, and then kind of the places that we can deepen relationally. I don't know about you guys, but Dallas has a real pressure around kid-centric parenting, I guess is the way I would put it, right? Kids got to be involved in sports. You've got to go to all of their, you fill in the blanks. And so when kids leave the house, there's a real danger that we look at each other and say, I'm not even sure who you are, much less whether I like you anymore. And it takes work beforehand to do that. And then it takes real intentional work. For us, it was about a 6-month period where we had to be very intentional. And I had to learn some new habits because I'm now in the house. I can't bother Julie all the time, those kinds of things. But that was a big change for us in terms of trying to figure out what it looked like around a house that was quieter and a house that I was now in all the time. Lucina?
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about us. Very similar, actually. But I would say, for me, I think there are three things to consider in this stage. And I think you have to really watch your own, and we've talked about them, but your own emotional well-being, your spiritual well-being, and your physical well-being. I think those are three things to be mindful of in this transition, and it's a big transition. And like Kyle said, there, no matter whether you launch your child well or your child is struggling out of your house, there's a grieving that goes on, and that's an emotional toll. There's a grieving that things are no longer like they used to be. Our daughter married right out of college. Our son is older. Our son left Dallas after graduating from college, loaded up a U-Haul with two other friends, and drove to LA to pursue the film industry against some counsel that his dad and I had given him. So it was a launching, and he was on his own, but it was difficult. Then a year later, his sister marries right out of college. And there was a period to grieve what had just happened. While we celebrate and it's wonderful and good, there is a grieving that goes on. And to deny that is to deny the emotional part of what is happening. Because equally as well, your family no longer looks the same. Oh my gosh, there's someone else there at Thanksgiving and Christmas, or they're not there. And neither is your child there because they're with his family. And that's a huge adjustment. And you have to be prepared for it and consider it. And then allow yourselves to sit in those feelings that you're going to have and process properly the emotional aspect. Then there is a spiritual aspect spoken of already. Just how do you do that together? I had a whole life with women's ministry during the day. Now we had to figure out and avoid making commitments to do things at night that pulled us separately. So that's a commitment we have. We don't do things at night that would be separate ministry unless we are doing them together, because that's time together. Then, like the Anders, 10 years ago, when our daughter got married, our house was empty, sort of. We have these people that live with us that are called residents, so our house really always has young adults in it. But when that happened, Kyle, 10 years ago, decided to office at home. That was major. It wasn't retirement, but it was now officing in our house. We are very different. He is very structured. We are both type A, but he's very structured, and he had no idea that all day long when he was away at an office, I spread my work from one end of the house to the other. And piles are here and piles are there, and I leave stuff stacked in the sink until towards the end of the day when I would clean up and And voila, it would be this wonderful house he walked into. Well, now he was like moving my piles. I'm like, stop touching my stuff. I'm working on that. And we had to learn to work together in the same space and allow for that. And then lastly, physical. I think you can't forget your own body, your care of that, and your care together. We had to, not had to, we went back and said, you know, what are some things we've always wanted to do we've never done? Well, he fly fished, but I don't know how, so I took some lessons. I'm still not very good, but, you know, maybe we can really successfully do that together someday. I'm still caught in the trees and everything else. But anyway, we go together. We had, during the kids, our kids were in high school, we'd never played tennis, but we did couples tennis. We had a ball. So now that we're older, I've had 3 hip surgeries. That doesn't work very well. But we did decide to get pickleball paddles, and we've played a couple times, and it's really fun, and it's really different. But what is it you can do that's different, that is new to you, new to both of you, so that it's a period of discovery and enjoyment together? So that's what I'd say.
Good. Anders, what about caring for elderly parents?
Yeah, so just fundamentally, just in terms of the way we think about caring for elderly parents, we remember that Exodus 20, the 5th commandment of the 10 commandments, says you're supposed to honor your father and mother, right? And Paul talks about that commandment in Ephesians 6, where he basically says, hey, it's the first commandment with a promise, right? It has a promise associated with it. Honor your father and mother so that it will go well with you and you will live long. There's another verse that I think about a lot as I think about our obligation to honor our parents. And that's 1 Timothy 5 basically says that if anyone does not provide for his relations and especially his immediate family, he's denied the faith and is worse than a non-believer. So what does it look like for me to provide for my family, and I would say my parents in that immediate family circle? And for us, we really took 2 or 3 core principles and asked ourselves, with respect to each set of parents, how do we apply those principles? How do we honor their wishes and honor their dignity? And how do we understand their needs? And so for us, that means that we have to really consider the needs of parents, what they desire. It's not what's most convenient for Todd and Julie. It's not what's easiest for Todd and Julie. It's what are our parents need? What are their desires? What does their dignity kind of require? I'm going to let Julie speak real briefly about the circumstances of our parents so you have a little bit more context for what that really looked like in terms of the hands and feet of that in our situation.
All right. So when we renovated our house, we moved in and renovated our house 14 years ago, and we took the garage and turned it into kind of a mother-in-law suite so that if any of our parents ever needed to come and be with us, they could. No one's come yet, but we still have one still here, so maybe that will happen at some point. But we wanted that to be available and for our parents to know that that was an option. With my mom, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2010, and for the next 4 years, my 3 siblings and I helped her. We walked through that very heartbreaking process and cared for her physically, financially, 2 moves. And luckily, we were able to do that with fairly like-mindedness. And we would just stop from time to time and kind of circle the wagons and ask each other, hey, do we still all feel good about where things are? Because it got to the point where she couldn't really express her wishes. Her dignity became kind of our guiding force. And we just wanted to make sure among the four of us that we all still felt good about that and continued down that path.
When you say the four of us, you mean your
siblings.
Group, right?
The sibling, yes.
So we're working with her siblings and their spouses to try and figure all of that out.
Yeah. And then when my stepmother's cognitive decline and my father's physical decline got to the point where they needed to relocate, they chose to move to Houston, where her son was. And they were there for 2 years, and much to our surprise, she left first. I mean, you know, she got her promotion, as I say, which was quite a surprise to us. We completely thought it would be the opposite way. And the blessing in that was my dad was able to come to Dallas, and we were able to care for him for the last 3 years, which was a sweet blessing. And then my father, or Todd's dad passed away 4 weeks after our engagement 25 years ago. So that was, we went into marriage with a grieving widow, and she's, that was 25 years ago. So we've been able to hopefully love on her well. She's had much more physical decline than cognitive decline. She's in a independent living facility, but has had multiple trips to the hospital and rehab facilities. In fact, she's currently in the hospital with a discharge on Tuesday, and we're not sure where she's going to be discharged to. So that brings me just to kind of one of the takeaways. So you can't try, you'll drive yourself crazy trying to plot out how this is going to happen. Somebody can take a fall, and then all your plans are completely changed. And you kind of reevaluate for the new normal and ask yourself if we're still answering their wishes and keeping their dignity, and do some research to give yourself options, but don't spend a ton of time plotting out something that we just do not know, you know, how that's going to go. And that's what I have to say.
Lucina?
Yeah, just a couple things to add to that. Those of you that are in it know there's a reason this is called, those of us in it, are called the sandwich generation, because that is what you are. You are sandwiched between caring for and honoring your elderly parents, and at the same time, we have grandkids now, not just our own children, but grandchildren, that we want to be involved in their lives, and it's a real pull. My mother is, we have two widowed mothers right now. My mother's 4 hours away in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I physically go once a month at least. We each talk. Kyle's father died tragically. He spent one whole week, literally moved in and stayed with her, and then was there every day for a month as she really went through that. There were so many things because it was such a shock. It was not, there was nothing wrong with him at all when he passed away. So that was very difficult. It was a very difficult time, but that was the way to love them. So what do we do today as they are great grandmothers, and both my mother late 80s, his mom mid 80s, we invite them to come travel with us, with the whole family. So we have four generations. We invite them into our home and remind them these aren't your grandchildren. These are your great grandchildren. My mother keeps getting confused. And I'm like, no, these are your great grand. And they can't come to you. Their life is very difficult and full. And it's time for you to come to our house. And so we try to work with making that happen. But same thing, we have moved my mom to a senior living center and really take care of absolutely everything she needs, because her short-term memory is gone, and that's financially, that's physically, and that's a demand, but a great joy and privilege.
Okay, what about releasing kids to the next life stage?
Me again. All right, so when we were preparing this, there was two verses that really came to mind, and I think they're up there. Here we go. So the Deuteronomy verse 6:6-9, as well as the Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And for those of you that just hearing that verse kind of does something to your gut, I want you to know that is not a biblical promise. That's a biblical principle. And we all know people who, godly parents who have had kids that have gone astray, and that is not a, a reflection on parenting necessarily. We also know a whole lot of folks, a whole lot of adults that are following hard after the Lord despite their upbringing and their circumstances. So that's not a promise. It's just a principle. Also, if you are familiar with the seasons of parenting, launching your child, that's where you move from a coach role into a friend role. You're there to provide support for them in advice and encouragement as a friend, not as a parent at that age. The primary need for your child in this stage is space, and space for them to be able to make some decisions, to live independently, and for you to encourage them from the sidelines and more of a hands-off approach. Let's see. Also, just transitioning from a child, when the child goes from your permanent home to the home outside, it can be a painful process, both for the child as well as for the parent. I know that was for us. Both of our girls have transitioned into college, so it's not a full transition. But even getting them to this point was not always the smoothest ride, and I'll let Todd share a little bit more about that.
So we all know this who have multiple children. Our children are individuals. They are different than we are, and they are different from each other. And so I think the thing that we have to remind ourselves of is our girls' names are Audrey and Eve, and Audrey and Eve are two different people. And they needed to be prepared for living independent from the family differently than one another, and they needed to be coached through that process differently than one another. I've got one who's a rule follower, who's an exceller, who's very good with people, and all that is part of that. And and I could parent 12 of her. And I've got one who we refer to as a pot toucher. Hey, that's a hot pot. Oh, I don't believe you. Let me put my hand on it to make sure that you're telling me the truth. She was much more difficult to parent. Not just because I couldn't just tell her, but because she needed to experience it, and we needed to let her experience it. So last year, when our girls went to college, we told them that they were going to be recipients of the Anders Family Scholarship, and there were certain expectations that needed to come with the Anders Family Scholarship, and that they would have that scholarship for 4 years, assuming that they met the expectations. Our oldest, in her junior year, did not meet those expectations. It was going well with her spiritually. It was going well with her relationally. She was maturing in, she's becoming the woman that I've always wanted her to be. But she didn't meet the expectations that we had set out as a family. And so we sat down and we had a conversation and said, hey, we are really sorry. We love you. We think you're doing a lot of things really well. But your senior year in college, you're going to have to figure out financially. You can, and we help coach her up. You can come back home and work, save up money, and then go back to school. You can go to school and incur debt. You can go back to College Station and work there and save money for school. But our financial involvement in your senior year is now non-existent. The great news of that for us is I think it may have been the best thing that's ever happened to our daughter. She's shown great responsibility. She's gotten a job. She's putting herself through college. She's going to finish with minimal debt because she understands the weight the debt's going to put on her. All things that if we would have continued to pay for college, notwithstanding her not meeting the expectations, she would have never learned during this stage. I don't want to give you the wrong idea. Let me tell you, it was heartbreaking. That is not what I envisioned in terms of how it was going to work with Audrey. I did. It's okay. It's okay. I know she's going to listen to it. It is not what I had dreamed, right? We had saved up. We were in position to help them all the way through school. To make that decision was very hard, but it's been great. And I have seen her become an amazing young woman, independent, as a part of that heartbreaking process for us. One other principle that I would just throw out here for us. We read a book before our kids graduated high school that was called Feeding the Mouth That Bites You. And it's a book about controlled emancipation. It's the idea is start early giving over to your children the things that need to be given over to them so that when they go to college for the first time and they have ability to be not under your roof, that they're not overwhelmed by all the choices that they have and all the responsibility they have. That was a great book for us. It really helped us do that well. We have to remind ourselves regularly, our responsibility is to raise grown-ups, not to raise grown-up children, right? And that is hard for us. It's hard to let go. I'm a high control person. So when I see my kids make decisions that are not the decisions that I would make, I have to bite my tongue and let those decisions inform wisdom for themselves. And we talk about decisions having natural consequences. And as a parent, sometimes it's really hard not to save our kids. It's really hard not to save our kids because we love them and we don't want them to experience the pain that we've experienced. But we've found that that's been super necessary as we've parented our kids through that phase.
Yeah, that's good. And that really ties into the last topic before we go to Q&A is just your kids marrying and having grandkids. You know, this Psalm 71:18 is kind of my verse for 2022. I run it through my heart all the time. Just even when I'm old and gray, oh God, do not forsake me until I declare your strength to this generation, your power to all who are to come. And so that's a major part of our life right now is just investing in our kids and our grandkids and other young people. And then Proverbs 17:6, grandchildren are the crown of old men and the glory of sons is their fathers. And I love that because it's really casting vision. And, you know, one of the things that we've always said is, you know, who your kids marry will have a bigger impact on the rest of their lives than anything else apart from a commitment to follow Christ. I'm going to say that again. Who your kids marry will have a bigger impact on the rest of their lives than anything else apart from a commitment to follow Christ. We see a lot of people our age that say, hey, you know, my kids are adults now, you know, and I'm going to let them navigate this dating and, you know, who they're going to spend time with and what all that looks like. And I'm like, what are you thinking? You know, have you not recognized the role that you play? You know, you go all the way back, you know, and as parents, we would actually arrange, you know, we would do the work for them. And so somehow we've gone from that to not being involved. And so just, you know, casting vision for training and involvement here, which is the most critical decision your kids are going to make. And, you know, it's interesting because we're heavily involved as our kids grow up in their sports and their college and their career. And the thing that's going to impact them is who they marry. I mean, that's really the thing that's going to matter. And so this is obviously gradual, but and it's never too late to jump in, but preparing, investing in your daughters and your sons and the opportunity to invest in the son-in-law and the daughter-in-law as they're engaged and just casting vision for them. You know, equipping them for what this is going to look like. Our kids, you know, are so often centered on their feelings and what seems right. And our role is to help them calibrate, you know, to what wisdom would have them do. it's just like us. I have to constantly be careful not to do what I feel like doing, but doing what wisdom would have me do. And so it's a huge opportunity for us with our kids to help them navigate that. And it's a great discipleship opportunity. But, you know, it is something that we can't force on our kids. And so it's helping them understand, helping them to see, seeing that we're for them. You know, as your kids, one of the things with Audrey, you know, I wanted to make sure I did is just to see, hey, I want to, you know, as you get interested in young men, man, I'd love to invest in them. I want to set them up. I want to do everything I can to set them up, you know, to be a great husband, whether that's for you or somebody else. So it's a win-win. I wanted her to feel like me spending time with young men who are pursuing her was a great gift she could give to them. And then it's up to me, you know, to demonstrate that in my relationship with them. You know, there's a book out there that was really helpful for us early on. And the title of it is What He Must Be. And, you know, the subtitle is The Man You Must Be If You Want to Marry My Daughter. And we had our son, you know, I walked through this with Jordan just so that he would know, hey, casting vision for what a young man needs to be a husband. And then for Audrey, you know, what she needs to look for in a future husband. And then as John started to date Audrey, he and I went through the book just so to help him calibrate, hey, you know what, these things are going to be helpful for you in life. And so that really also sets the foundation for the relationship as your kids marry, as you've invested in suitors or, you know, who they're engaged to. There's a depth of friendship and relationship that makes it seamless. I told Lucina, I cringed last night, you know, when Ted jokingly said, you know, you're at the back of the room and you see this pervert up there. And I'm like, no, that's not happening. You know, my job is to make sure she's not walking down the aisle to stand next to a pervert. And he was kidding. But I will tell you, you know, sometimes that mindset can permeate other elements of that. And so it's a great opportunity. You know, Jordan and I and John still get together every month and we have accountability. You know, one of the things, again, dads with your sons, moms with your daughters is, you know, enter into their journey of struggling with pornography, with masturbation. You know, we know there's books like Every Young Man's Struggle, Every Man's Struggle. And, you know, John and I went through that together as he was pursuing Audrey, so that he knew my story with addiction to pornography and masturbation. And so it was normative for us to talk about that as he was preparing to pursue Audrey. And so I would just say, man, go heavy and deep here. Don't be passive and don't go with the culture that said, hey, they're young adults. And again, you know, it's all founded on the relationship. And so I have to make sure that I've got a depth of relationship that my kids know that I'm for them. And lastly, with grandkids, you know, your heritage is largely defined by the influence and impact on your kids and your grandkids. It just is. I can spend a lot of time doing other things, but my heritage is largely defined by the time with the relationship and time with my kids and my grandkids. And so making that a major priority in your life, I have a decision grid of what I say yes to, and a big piece of that is, obviously, does it involve Lucina? Does it involve my kids? Does it involve my grandkids? I trusted Christ largely because I had a granddaddy who was a follower of Christ who I saw once or twice a year, but I knew that was a big deal to him, and so it gave it credibility when I was exposed to the gospel in my early 20s. And so Lucina's going to talk a little bit more about what this looked like for us. One of the other things I would say, you know, Deuteronomy 5, often people will talk about the verse that says, hey, you know, the sins of the fathers extend to the third and the fourth generations. Well, if you read the rest of that, it says, and the blessing and loving kindness extends as well. And so, you know, sometimes we think about that, but we don't think about the fact that, hey, what I'm doing is largely going to influence my grandkids and my great-grandkids.
So just practically speaking, you know, how did we do this? How did we fold John in? How have we done this? And I think one thing is just so basic and simple is treating John, our son-in-law, like he is our son. And that even goes down to introducing our kids. So Kyle really helped me with this, learning to say we don't have two kids, we have three kids. And we include John. We have a 34-year-old son-in-law, a 33-year-old son, and a 32-year-old daughter. So learning to introduce him as one, because he is. He and our daughter are one. He is one of our children, and treating him as such. And as Kyle mentioned, them having lunch, John and I have lunch, not as often now as we once did, but fostering that relationship just as I would do with my own son, as I do with Jordan, my son. And so fostering that. And then, by golly, be sure you do this well enough so that when the icing gets spread on the cake, you can eat it all up, and that's grandkids. And that is what they are. And grandkids are the pride of life. They just are. And it's greater than you can ever imagine. And I think part of that is because you get to lavish all the love and send them home. And you know what? You don't care. Oh my gosh, he's not crawling. He's 6 months old. What's wrong with him? Oh my goodness, he's not, you know, he's not growing this way. He's not doing that. He hasn't reached. You don't care. You're like, oh girl, you don't want him crawling. He's going to be in all your cabinets. But you know what? I mean, as a mother, you obsess over that. As a grandmother, you just love it because you get to carry him around a little bit longer and you get to be in his face a little bit longer. He's not off exploring. And so that's true for every stage, I would say, of life. And we just, we want to be available to help care for. We have our daughter and son-in-law are working parents, both working, and they have childcare arrangements. But by the way, there's been a pandemic since we had our, and they had no childcare because all of them were closed. Well, guess what? For the first 10 months of our grandson's life, we had him in our home every single day, and they went to work because of the pandemic. And so things like that, again, that you can't see have happened, and what a joy and privilege. And the strengthening of that relationship and that bond, and our bond with Henry, the oldest, is very strong. And I think it's because of that pattern laid down so early. And then to think again of how can I love, the greatest legacy we could leave with our grandchildren is that they would see and know Jesus Christ through us. And so I love show and tell. So things that we have done, Kyle, for every one of our grandchildren, has done a journal Bible. So the Bible's with the margin in the middle. So every year that he knows one is coming or has come, he reads through the Bible in a year and makes notes to Henry in the column, to Charlotte. Now it's a daughter, a granddaughter. And so there are notes to Charlotte on every page in every column, something that we hope they one day will read all of the thoughts and dreams and plans and failures of your grandparents that we can give them as a gift. And then we do... you know, we want to help and aid hiding God's word in their heart. And there's tons of ways to do that. And it can start when they're teeny, teeny, tiny. And one of our very own members has done this really well. And a gal named Elizabeth Tamlin is God's word in your heart. And the pages can be slobbered on and everything else. And they're tiny, simple little verses that you can teach a two-year-old. You can start when they're younger and reading it over them, but you can teach a 2- and a 3-year-old, and they, just like Ted said last night, they don't forget anything. And because of that, they are a sponge, and scripture will just, it just attaches to them. And what a great what a great heritage you can have. We try to make learning fun. We try to make Jesus fun. And we do that in tons of ways. Christmas is coming. We took a white sheet, rip it up, tie it on them. You're now the angel in the story. We take a brown one. You're now Joseph. And you know, and it doesn't matter. Little Tiny can have a role. We read it and you're it. And put this baby doll in your arms. And we're going to keep doing that. And we're going to look for fun, interactive ways to bring Jesus into everything that we do.
Okay, so that's a lot. And we'd love to just spend the rest of our time just with questions and, that you guys have. So, Ashley, do we have a microphone? Okay. If not, we'll, yeah.
I'll be the runner. So if you got a question, I'm coming to you. Questions? Right here. Hold it just right under your chin.
We'll crack the lid on the questions. Can you be specific about expectations? We got a kid going off to college next year, and I'm curious about the Stafford Family Scholarship. So we just would love more education on what you guys set as expectations.
Yeah. So I think they differ based on the child, right? Some children can be 4.0 students, and some kids just can't. And so we don't want to create expectations that are not attainable by our children. We think about those expectations falling into three buckets: spiritual, social, and academic, right? And so there are those there are those components of expectations for our kids. And there are places where grace has been extended, right? Hey, if it's a 3.5 because your child excels academically and they get a 3.4 and they work their tail off, we're going to give grace. If on the other hand, and you get a child who really enjoys the social and decides that the academic's not as important, we're able to say, hey, we've talked about this as a scholarship, right? And just like any other scholarship, if you don't meet the expectations, you can lose your scholarship. Or you can be put on probation for a semester, right? We're going to give you some grace, and we're going to give you a semester's worth of probation. But you need to know that if you don't figure that out, here's what it ends up looking like for you. Here's the only other thing that I would say around that, and this is where my wife was really good for me. It should not be punitive, right? Our goal is not to punish our children. Our goal is to teach our children. And so when my daughter lost the Anders Family Scholarship, I said, hey, there are multiple ways that you can navigate this. If you want my input, I'm happy to help you do that, all right? I'm happy to come alongside you, but it's your choice. You can come home, you can get a full-time job, you can take out student loan debt. If you know, she went that direction. She needed some help figuring out how do you do that. So we did that together, but the goal for us was to not break the relationship based on the consequences of her choices. Is that helpful?
And I'm sure the Anders and the Thompsons did it as well. Ours looked a little different. And we both, I'm sure, have copies. So get our email. We'll send you, you can just look at them and adjust accordingly. I'm going to get my steps in today.
Okay, so hold it right up to you. You were talking about the elderly. And so I would like to know what Watermark's place is in the elderly as we all grow up and get old, so far as membership, so far as financial needs, so far as anything.
Yeah, look, I would say number one, we want to be a church that honors wisdom that comes with age. Well, absolutely, but I'm going to give you some general comments, right? Our society has decided that young people with new ideas are more important than age and wisdom, and we just don't see that in our Bible. And so we're going to be called to honor the elderly. I think that's going to look in lots of different ways. And I think we're trying to figure some of that out in terms of what that looks like. We have been a really young church for a really long time. Now we're getting to that point as a church where we're starting to address some of these issues. Colin, I know you've spent a little more time around it than I have, but
yeah, you've heard us say that there's no member of our church that will ever go hungry or homeless. And so that's a commitment we make to single moms. You know, that we have a huge Caris ministry that operates behind the scenes where we're very, very proactive in that and being involved. And obviously that's other people being involved in that. But I think to your point, that's going to become a bigger and bigger ministry. This is my mom's 85 and she's a member here and she hasn't come since COVID. It's just this place is hard to navigate for elderly people. And I'm always so impressed when I see people, you know, coming here. And so I'm like, hey, I think our eyes are being open, you know, to Todd's point, to just, hey, as that becomes more and more of a factor, we need to be proactive in just the ways that we're consistent with what we're saying from practical, you know, practical ways. So I hope that's helpful.
And I think if you've got ideas, you bring them forth. That's how we've started so many things. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I would love to meet. I've been aware of others who have struggled. One, you know, can't be in the loud music because of her ear problems, and so we need a special place for people like that. Just various things. You talked about the brain thing. I personally had a brain injury, and I was kicked out of community group because I didn't behave well enough. And so since our people are getting older, I just have a huge heart for them.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we need help in this area.
There's a question back here.
Oh,
so.
Coming.
Julie, when you were talking about releasing kids, you mentioned Deuteronomy 6 through 9. And can you please remind me of the Proverbs scripture you referenced?
Yes. It was 22:6.
22:6, thank you. And then I have one other question. And I think what might be most helpful is to get your decision grid, Kyle, if you'd be willing to pass that along. Otherwise, I'm curious to know, if you can, in a short window, share with us how you come to decisions as empty nesters, given different desires, you know, time with kids, you know, trips that you want to go on, et cetera.
All right. So is that how we come to the decision as a couple?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that, one of the great benefits we have as followers of Christ is, you know, the Spirit is in both of us, and we know that the Spirit unifies us. And so often the way that happens is spending a lot of time talking and praying and wrestling and marinating so that we allow allow God to unify us and get us aligned, because we know God doesn't want us going on separate, you know, trips and vacations and all these other things. The richness that He has for us in marriage. And so, you know, a lot of that is just, it's time, you know, and it's talking, it's listening. It's why I love that 1 Peter 3:7-9 passage. It's having a heart that's listening and understanding, not focused on, you know, what I want to do. You know, you've got the same things in the whole Philippians too, just, you know, considering my spouse as more important than myself, having that be the posture of my heart. So that does not happen naturally, and it's increasingly difficult, I think, coming into this life stage where you have made relatively different decisions. One of the things that we did is we did it even more so when I moved my office home, is Lucina became part of our business. I didn't make a decision on anything without her being involved, understanding, because she knows my weaknesses. She knows what I'm prone to. And those are just great opportunities, again, to increase the richness and intimacy. And if, You know, if God says the two become one, you know, there should be no aspect of my life that Lucina's not involved in. And if she doesn't understand, it's my job to help her understand so that she can help me. And, you know, sometimes that can be polarizing. He's the finance guy. He deals with the money. You know, or she's the money person. And I'm this person. I think finding ways to bridge that, and just don't assume that that's a good thing. You know, again, it doesn't mean I have to be involved in all the decisions Lucina's making to keep our house running. But there needs to be, you know, a level of overlap so that we're not, again, living two separate lives. And the whole decision grid, you know, one of the things that I often say that's easy for me, I only have to do two things every day, and I may have 100 things on my list, and God only wants me to do two. One, I need to deepen in intimacy with Christ, and I need to deepen in intimacy and love the people that are in my sphere. That's my mother-in-law. That's my mother, you know, our two widows. It's my wife. It's my kids. It's my grandkids. It's the people around me. So if I don't do that, all this other, you know, that's what faithfulness for me looks like. So I know, you know, saying yes to something is saying no to something else. So if I get invited to go to the Cowboy game and it's going to take all day Sunday and my son or son-in-law is not going, my wife's not going, my grandkids are not going, Sunday's a day, it's a family day, I'm like, okay, I'm saying no not to spend time, you know, with my family. And that may be fun, but I just want to recognize it's not an automatic yes. It's a, wow, I got to count. That's an expensive day. Because if Psalm 90 is true generally, you know, generally, I have 339 weeks left in my life until I'm 70. And so as I count those weeks down, you know, on a percentage basis, that's significant. So just having some basis to make decisions. And so there's detail under that, and I'm glad to send it to you. It's been helpful for me and Lucina.
And I think I'm going to just jump in again too. I think when stuck, the two of you, that's where the beauty of community comes in, and that in the counsel of many, there's wisdom. And so to trust the people around you that they love you enough to help you see what you don't see, or together, or your spouse, so that you can become aligned and unified in what you're thinking or doing. Other questions? Coming.
Right here.
Go ahead.
Right here. Can you hear me okay? Y'all talked about aging parents and talking with your siblings. How do you maneuver through your siblings when they want to make decisions and not include the wishes, or they think they're, you know, like they're saying, no, mom needs this, this, and this. How do you navigate through them not making a decision without the wishes of our parents?
Yeah, so... it's hard, and it requires patience, and it requires us understanding what's driving our siblings. In the situation we're in with my mom right now, my brother, who is has it together in so many ways, is a planner. He wants to know what the next 7 steps are going to be, and he wants to spend lots of time focused on those next 7 steps. And I love that about him. But there are just things that aren't knowable. And so so I can't just go, we can't know that, I'm not going to talk to you. I have to spend time with him, listen, understand, make sure he understands that I understand the issues, and then help gently guide him towards, well, I know you want to respect mom's wishes as much as we can. Let's talk about what we can do to respect mom's wishes. I know you want to maintain mom's dignity. Let's talk about what can we do to make sure that we maintain mom's dignity during this time. And he's not going to say, I'm fortunate, I've got a brother who's not going to say, I don't care about mom's dignity and I don't care about her wishes. And so we it just takes time, relational trust, and sometimes hours of conversation to be able to help direct the conversation to a place that does honor her appropriately. I know that's a really fuzzy answer, but that's the reality for me. It is.
I would love to. So, Father, thank you for the incredible place that you have everyone in this room, that they have a full life, and that they have many opportunities to love and engage the generation above and below them. And so, Lord, you tell us if we lack wisdom in any area to ask, and you will give liberally. And so we do. We ask that you would help us in this, that you would continue to use us to bring glory to you in all that we say and do in loving the legacy ahead of us and the one behind us. In your son's name, amen.